Author's Day at Vancleek Farmers Market. When Roland first approached me about this idea, about 3 weeks ago, maybe? Three weeks ago. I said, wow, it's going to be tight getting ready for this event. I was just about to leave for Vancouver, I think, to go visit my grandson and my kids out there. And I said, Roland, I don't have time to read three books between now and then. And he said, well, that doesn't matter. We can still do it. I said, yeah. So we concocted the idea of actually making this about authors and the life of authors and what it's like in this day and age to actually self-publish the way the three of you have done, quite successfully, it looks like. And so that's our topic today. Being an author with all the tools that are available to us, social media and self-publishing platforms on the internet. And we're going to hear first-person account from each of you about what that's like. But first, I thought that we would just launch into the books. You all have books that you've currently published and are available. Why don't we start with you, Sam, The Trouble with Friday, an Emily Blossom mystery. And Sam Putzel, I call her. That's how she's known locally here in Bankley Hill, has also written Murder on the Hill, which is an Emily Blossom mystery as well. She lives just down the road from Bankley Hill on the McAlpine Corners with her unreasonable facsimile of Pete Picken. So everybody can guess who that is. And then children's author Valerie Redmond, author of Emma and the African Wishing Bead. And that's a kid's book, as we said. And you live in Saint-Lazare, just down the highway here towards Montreal. You took writing lessons from Sam.
Yeah, and you're from Vancleek Hill.
Yeah, you're a Vancleek Hill native. And you live with your husband and two kids and a dog and a cat in Saint-Lazare. And Roland R.J. Robert, author of Lake of Hidden Secrets. So Roland makes his home near Maxville, where he lives with his wife and his cat. So Sam, would you like to give us a little synopsis of your latest book, The Trouble with Friday, an Emily Blossom mystery, and also maybe a few mention of your Murder on the Hill as well?
Yeah. I've written two mystery novels that take place in a town that's called Emerald Hill, which could be very similar to the town that we happen to live in. And both books are illustrated with buildings that happen to exist and are very familiar to people who live around here. But the books themselves are written in about two characters, Emily Blossom, who is an 80-something, small-something, little old lady who is absolutely determined to make justice in the world, and her sidekick, Pete Picken, who is an antique dealer. All of the characters, or many of the characters in the books, both books, are very familiar to characters that you might find in a small town. And they confront mysteries, murder mysteries, and the town itself is the framework for the unfolding of whodunit.
It's a classic whodunit.
Okay. Both of them are classic whodunits.
Okay. Good. That's a good synopsis. That's enough to whet our appetite if you haven't read the book already. Valerie, would you like to give us a little synopsis of your book? And I'll just give the title here. It's Emma and the African Wishing Bead.
So my book is an illustrated children's book for children, I'd say, 5 to 12 years old. Although I've had some teenage girls tell me how much they enjoyed receiving it, and they were 16 and 17 years old.
That's
so that's fun, yeah.
Yes.
So for me, my story is that, you know, I was inspired to write this after I spent a year, I'm a teacher, and I spent a year working in Kenya with girls and women doing income-generating projects and helping to start a school for street kids. And when I came home, I felt that I wanted to do something someday that would maybe support a charity that sent girls to school, because that was such a need where I was working. My daughter's name is Emma. She's now 11. But at the time when I got the inspiration for the book, she was a baby, and I was pushing around the baby carriage. And I was thinking about how I hoped all her dreams would come true and that she would have a happy life. And I thought of the girls in Kenya who don't always get those opportunities. And suddenly I had a little light bulb moment where I thought of writing a book that would connect her to a little girl in Kenya, and the story would be about their dreams together. So it starts with Emma finding a wishing bead while she's playing on the beach, and the bead has crossed the ocean. And then you go back in time to a little girl by the name of Keone, who finds the bead, and her grandmother explains to her that it is a wishing bead, and that she needs to make a wish and tie it on and believe in her dreams and believe in herself is the essential message of the book. And someday when she loses that bead, she should leave it for someone else to find. And she knows that her dreams will come true and to keep following her dreams. And so the bead gets washed into the ocean, and it goes back to Emma finding it.
Oh,
so it's
really?
A bit of a full circle there.
Interesting. Complete with its original powers, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I love this quote from Kofi Annan that I found when I was doing a little bit of research about your book. Study after study has taught us that there is no tool for development more effective than the education of girls. No other policy is likely to raise economic productivity, lower infant and maternal mortality, improve nutrition, and improve health better than the development that is aimed and targeted at young women.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, we know that when we educate girls, we have the potential to break the cycle of poverty in one generation. An educated woman will generally have fewer children that she can support. They will go to school, and the cycle of poverty ends. And in those countries where that happens, we tend to have more democracy and more peace.
Yes.
So for me, it's the way forward for peace.
Very good. Excellent. Okay. Roland, give us a little synopsis of Lake of Hidden Secrets.
Okay. The book is fiction romance with mystery. It starts out at a fictional hospital in Montreal. And after the first chapter, the heroine goes into the Laurentian Mountains to a fictional resort town, and that's where the whole story takes place. The book started out as an essay that I wrote back in 1980.
You're saying specifically essay and not short story.
It was an essay.
Interesting.
Just an essay,
okay.
A page and a half.
Okay.
Yeah. Page and a half essay, which is in the book, by the way, at a certain spot.
Okay.
But, it started as that, and the book developed around it. The heroine is not happy with the job that she does as a surgeon and wants to change over to a Marcus Welby-type home doctor. And it goes from there. Then she falls in love, and then mystery sets in.
Yes,
and
we can even reveal, I think, without spoiling anything, the reason why she's unhappy with her job.
She's unhappy because her father's a head surgeon, and she became a surgeon trying to get back to being close to her father, and so she didn't do it for herself. She did it to increase that relationship.
Yes. Okay.
After a tragedy when she was a child had separated the two of them.
Yes.
In her mind, at least.
Okay. So our familiar theme: we always love to blame our parents for all of our ills, right? Until we become parents, and then it's a different story. Yeah. Okay. So that's a pretty good synopsis of the three works that you folks have produced and contributed to the world. But as I said off the top, we really wanted to have a discussion with you. This is a really valuable opportunity for us to get an insight into what life looks like from the point of view of an author, and especially an author that's decided to self-publish, you know, not send out manuscript after manuscript after manuscript to some publishing house somewhere, but actually take on a large part of the responsibilities and the work and the creativity and everything that goes with it to get your works out there. And so I wanted to explore that with you today. I thought it was just it's something you all have in common, but from very different perspectives. So who wants to jump in and maybe talk about what made you choose the actual publisher that you're using today? Because being self-published doesn't mean that you don't have a publisher, right? Maybe somebody could comment on that, what the distinction is between self-published and still using a publisher.
Well, to me, self-publishing means that you have a publisher, but you keep the final word.
So a matter of control, basically.
A matter of control. Rather than being told, you're being suggested, and you have the final word in anything that is done, and you keep the copyright at the end of the day.
Yes. What's the name of the publisher you use?
I used Frism Press out of Vancouver.
Okay.
But before to choose them, I went online and I searched through many.
You did a fair amount of research?
Yes, lot of research first.
Okay.
And for me, they were the best company.
Yes.
Which doesn't mean that there aren't other good companies out there. It just means that for me, they were the best.
They work for you. How about you, Sam, or Blanche?
Yeah.
I think I said earlier, you're known locally as Sam Putzel, but your pen name and your real name, you said, Blanche Bernard, which is White Fox in French.
Yes, that's right.
Putzel. What's been your experience with choosing a publisher and narrowing it down and finding one that worked for you?
Well, as a mystery writer, there are over 9,000 mystery novels that come out every year. And
it's a popular genre, isn't it?
It's a very popular genre. And I have the wallpaper of rejection letters for other works that I've done.
Yes.
So I decided that I wanted to publish before it was too late, and that the one way I could do it was to self-publish.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to do it online. Digital publishing has enabled people to have access to self-publishing and access to the public that has never been available before.
Yes.
It's completely changed
the
publishing world.
An incredible array of tools as well, editing tools and also printing, obviously.
Yeah.
But and everything in between in the process. Yeah, it's quite
and
impressive.
And the iUniverse people that I used were available online. Since I published with them, they have sold out to Random House. And, you know, the self-publishing industry has blossomed.
Yes.
And the opportunities are more or less limitless for people who do write.
So they were bought out by Random House, but they're still operating under iUniverse because
that's
a publisher that's identified on Amazon, for example.
Yeah.
And are they based in Texas? Is that the company?
Indiana. Yeah.
I think your company is based in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. Valerie?
My head office is in Mexico City. Yeah.
Okay. Want to give us a little overview on your company?
Sure. So my experience was I also know that the children's book market is completely saturated, and many people had told me, well, good luck with that, you know.
Yeah.
And I did try and get a traditional publisher. I thought, well, I'll give it a year, you know, you just never know. And so I got a few rejection letters and mostly just no letters at all. You just mostly don't hear back from anyone.
Yeah.
I wasn't too disappointed because I knew that self-publishing was changing, and I had heard about Halo Publishing International, and had heard some really good things. And it's owned by a woman by the name of Lisa Umina, and she has actually become a mentor to me. I mean, it's maybe a little, I don't know a lot about other self-publishers, but she really does, she focuses on children's books, and you do need a lot of help with layout and all of that. And she has been enormously helpful. I'm actually working on another project right now with a group of high school students in Hudson at Westwood High School. It's called the Bridge to Burundi Project. And to make a long story short, 7 years ago, these high school students started raising money to build a school in Burundi, Africa, and raised over $100,000, have
really?
Now built a school, a medical center, and have 500 kids in school. And every year they're looking for new projects that will raise money. So I suggested to them that we write a children's book with their group of literacy students and the art students at the school.
Okay. And did your publisher buy into
this is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Is, you know, the thing about self-publishing is there is upfront free fees, and especially if you want their help with marketing. And she decided to do the whole project pro bono. So
really?
Thousands of dollars.
Wow.
In terms of publishing and marketing.
Interesting.
And she has guided us and really been on the phone doing meetings, and she's been wonderful. I can't say enough good things about Halo Publishing.
Because she believed in the project.
She really does, yeah.
I just want to take a step backwards here for a sec, because I just realized I'm not completely clear on the difference. You don't have to send a manuscript to a self-publishing publisher, right? Is that correct? Like, there's not a matter of them accepting or rejecting you, really?
I think it depends. With Halo Publishing, they like to work with books that they feel that they can promote.
And so I did have to send in my manuscript, and so they did approve.
So there is sort of an approval process with
them?
There
was with them, yeah.
Okay, but they seem to be sort of more involved maybe than your typical self-publisher.
I think so, yes.
Okay. How about you folks, Sam and Roland?
Well, I think that iUniverse is probably one of the larger self-publishing companies, and what they do is they provide services to the author so that the author has access to the professional editors, as an example,
yes,
and to the marketing, but they seem to have tapped into the interest of authors to be able to finance their own works instead of having a publisher that would need to finance the complete cost of putting out a book.
So that's the thing. That's what I thought sort of differentiated them from traditional publishers, is that if an author steps up and they're willing to actually invest in their own work, right?
Yes,
so,
that's it.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And it depends. Like, you can buy the services, which at any level. You can write your own work and then have it published as you've written it, or you can also tap into their resources as well.
Okay, so it's almost a la carte. You can sort of
pick and
choose.
Another big difference is that everything now is print on demand. So it used to be when you self-published, you were having to purchase a large stock of books that you then needed to sell. And if you're selling on, you know, we still buy stock, but, you know, if you're selling on Amazon, everything being online, you know, they're not keeping any stock. It's someone orders it and it's printed and sent to them.
Right. So there's no big inventory.
That's
to
right.
have to worry about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
How about you, Roland? When you chose your publisher, was that one of the considerations? What is the kind of books they carried, or what kind of support you're going to get from them?
Well, that was one of the considerations, but they carry all different types of books. But they would suggest to you, if the book was not up to par, they would suggest to you that you could make it better.
How to improve it?
How to improve it.
Would they ever come out and outright reject a book, do you think?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so, but they would advise you accordingly.
So their approach would be you pays your money and you takes your chance kind of thing.
Their approach is that they want to publish good books.
Yes.
But if you absolutely want to publish a book, well, you know.
They'll help you do it.
They'll help you do it.
Yeah, okay.
There are some people, too, who are only wanting 5 copies for their grandchildren or, you know,
yes.
a family history, and it might have very limited appeal, but
yes.
they can still have their works
right.
published.
Okay. I noticed you were all on electronic books or digital books, right?
Yes.
Mostly Kindle, I think. Are you on other platforms as well? Anybody on Kobo?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're on Kobo as well?
Yeah.
Okay. So would your publisher that you hired to do the initial, do they look after getting you on other platforms, or do you have that sort of leeway to do it yourself, or is it a mix kind of thing?
For me, it was an option, but it was kind of a pretty standard package that I chose that included a digital version.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty standard.
So that's part of the package kind of thing. Okay. How about
and
you, Sam?
All of it is done digitally. You know, you write your manuscript on the computer, you send it by internet. All of the illustrations are by attachments. So it is already in digital format. And
you're saying that the production process is all digitized.
Correct,
yeah,
right.
Obviously. So it's on that platform.
So from the author's point of view, it's a huge learning curve. For
okay.
me, it was a big learning curve because
okay. Say more about that. That sounds interesting.
I did all the typing.
Yes.
I typed out the manuscript. It has to be done in a format. So they tell you how to do it. But you learn how to run the program, you learn how to send it in, you learn how to do the editing, you learn how to do the illustrations, the layout, the cover. They will give you any kind of advice that you want, but in my case, I did all the illustrations, I did the cover. I assumed that they would be doing it for me, but when I started the project, I had no idea how big it was,
okay.
and either one of the books.
When you say how big, you mean how much work it would
take? How much work, how many steps,
yes,
what it really involved, and again, it all depends on what you want to know.
Yes.
But I wanted to have a good book. I wanted to have a good quality book that would look good on the bookshelves and that would not have any proofreading errors,
mm-hmm.
That would have a correct layout. That would be a professional book, and so I was able to do that through the help of the self-publishing people that were at the other end of the phone that I could call. But it's all in digital format
okay.
to start with.
So you were using iUniverse, And it sounds like what you're saying is you were really happy with the level of care that they took all along the way. Did they give you good, like, good proofreading services, for example? Like, were they sending back your galleys and saying, like, with corrections and that kind of thing?
Oh, absolutely.
Really, eh?
Because to me, that's one of the indications of a good quality book.
Yes.
It was a service that I found was very important. I had to pay for it. But I wouldn't have had access to that kind of service or knowledge in any other way that I knew of, certainly not among the people that I knew. So it was professional service available.
Yes.
For a fee. Interesting, from the point of view of self-publishing, I have been able to sell enough books to pay for both books.
Okay.
The cost of what it cost me.
Yes.
And I've only marketed locally because marketing is not my forte. Maybe Raymond would want to, Roland would want to talk on that because he's very, very good at marketing.
Raymond's marketing for all of us.
Yeah, he's an excellent marketer.
Before we get into marketing, because I want to ask you all about that, but Roland, give us a little insight into your experience in terms of the process. For example, how many iterations of your manuscript did you go through?
Well, the process was with First Impress was very good. They go with me throughout the whole sequel. For instance, the title alone was changed 4 times.
Really?
Yeah. And it was edited 2 times. Even the font in it, I had the choice. They offered me different fonts. I had the choice of what I wanted. Of course, that was in the package that I chose. They have 3 different packages, and you choose the package you want.
Yes.
For instance, in the package I want, I had all the e-products there, the Kobo and the Kindle and Amazon and the whole works.
And how was the, when you say edited twice, you mean the final product was sort of put through the meat grinder completely? Like, was it a rewrite kind of thing? Restructuring?
It was totally edited. The first time it was just a basic edit, and then the second time it was a total edit, and in fact they gave me suggestions. For instance, you'll find French words in it, and that's because the book was written on a Montreal issue, written in Montreal and in the Laurentians.
Okay.
And so they suggested I put some French words in it because it's in the province of Quebec.
Oh, yes.
So that's the level of editing that they did an example of it.
Interesting.
And
how did you find the proofreading process with them? Were you happy with it?
Oh, yeah. Happy with every aspect of it. Like, there's nothing I can say that I'm not happy with, with what they did.
That's a good recommendation, very strong. And that's for
Frisson Press.
Okay. So let's get into marketing a little bit. Do you have to commit to a certain number of books from these companies when you go through the process? Or you were saying it's sort of on demand, so is there a minimum number or anything, Valerie?
No. So I chose to order a certain number of books that I wanted for a book launch and some local events that I was doing. And the rest of the sales were online, have been online.
Okay, yeah. Okay, interesting. And how about you, Sam? Do you start off with a certain number?
I did, because I ordered the amount that I wanted and the rest is available online.
How many was that? Do you mind telling us?
The first order was 150 books, and after that, I guess I've sold about 1,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Of 2 books.
Yes, okay.
So maybe not quite that much, but close.
Close, okay.
Yeah. And it's on demand, which I think for environmentally is very appealing.
Yes. So you would put in orders as you went through them, maybe 50 or 100 at a time kind of thing? And then as you sold them, just put in another order?
Yeah.
And Roland, you have a similar experience?
Same thing. You can order one book or a couple of hundred, whatever you want.
Really?
But the more you order, of course, the bigger the discount.
Yes.
But you can order whatever you want. And that's a big help.
Okay.
I'd just like to say that the other side of the coin is that I approached bookstores to sell my book. And because it's self-published, I did come up against a wall of discrimination.
Yes,
for
I've
a
heard
number
about
of
that
reasons.
Before.
And well, basically because they say, and you should never tell a bookseller that you sell your book through Amazon, because they of course, that's their direct competitor.
Yeah, of course, yes.
And
yes.
So it is a very competitive business. Yeah. And working through bookstores is a whole other aspect.
Mm. I imagine there'd be a difference between the independent bookstores and the ones that are part of the big chains like Chapters and Indigo and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, my experience with Chapters is they carry the book online anyway, so if you want to do a book signing, they're quite happy if you can come in and set up a table. They'll order the books for you.
Oh, excellent.
And then when people, you sign them and people go and pay at the cash.
Yes.
But, you know, any sort of extra business they can drum up, they seem to appreciate. But yeah, the independent bookstores, I had a similar experience going to children's bookstores, and I didn't get a great response. I did get a few to carry it, but very, very reluctantly.
Oh, so it's the independents that are less cooperative than the big chains, in your experience.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, that's kind of counterintuitive.
The big chains are already selling it online, yeah, so they're quite happy to sell it in their store.
It's an extension of what they're already doing. Okay, interesting. Yeah, interesting. So marketing, I mean, we've just sort of touched on it with the bookstores, but aside from doing book signings at bookstores and that kind of thing, what are some of the venues and outlets that you folks have tracked down and found that works for you? How about Roland?
We've gone to markets, or I've gone to markets.
Yes, farmers markets.
I've gone to farmers markets. I've gone to flea markets.
Okay.
And I've had good results there, and I've met a lot of people and got a lot of publicity through that.
Yes.
And sold a lot of books that way.
Yes.
It's a good market.
You've been here faithfully at the Banklick Hill Farmers Market every Saturday for how long now? At least a year, I guess?
It'll be a year in May.
Okay,
yeah,
interesting.
It's become my second home.
Yeah. And what do you like about it? Do you like meeting people? And I notice you're really quick to come around from behind your table and engage people in conversation, that kind of thing.
I love the atmosphere. I love the people and the atmosphere and the friendliness of it.
Yeah,
and everybody wants to talk to everybody.
Yes.
And it's just a wonderful atmosphere.
I have to say, what was appealing about engaging with you was that you were not on a mission to sell. It was not hard sell. You just wanted to chat and talk about whatever came up. And, by the way, if you're interested, here's a book. Like, it was, you know, very, very soft sell. And, you know, it makes it quite, I mean, that's what the market's all about, right? People don't like to be intimidated, and they like to just engage and chat. And you did that really well. It was very welcoming. You also attended, I think, a book fair in Toronto.
Yes,
right?
I went to the Toronto International Book Fair last summer.
And how does that compare to a smaller venue like this? Is it about sales there, or just getting your name out there?
It's more about sales. It's, you know, and the bigger it gets, it seems like it's like living in a big place. It's less of the country-friendly atmosphere.
Would the buyers there be for bookstores or chains, or would they be individual book buyers?
No, they were, the people I saw were mostly individuals.
Oh, is that right?
But I did meet some book publishers and that.
Yeah,
but,
so they'd be scouting those events as well, I suppose.
There was some, yeah.
Yeah. Sam, have you attended a book fair like that?
No, I haven't. And I'm one of those people that would rather write than market.
Yeah.
And I have a big difficulty with that. But my wish list, if I were doing marketing, would be to focus online. You know, there's a huge opportunity there for promoting your book. Websites, blogs, book clubs, Goodreads. There's a huge, limitless amount of opportunity there.
Yes.
And I would like to find somebody who would want to develop that for me on my behalf. But it's a whole other field of knowledge, and I just haven't gotten into it yet. It's certainly a huge potential.
Yes.
Because it's digital publishing. It has a whole new ability worldwide.
Yes.
To appeal to a worldwide audience.
The reach, as you say, is almost limitless, but also there are many, many, many fish in that pond, right? So that's what you're up against, obviously. So how to rise above it, at least. I mean, would you target, I'm assuming, well, not necessarily you, Valerie, are looking not for a local audience. Your books are sort of locally based, relatively speaking, but you're kind of a more international subject matter, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Does that affect how you market your book?
Well, I can't say I'm really a marketing person either, so this has been a huge challenge for me, and I'm still learning, and I'm always hearing about something that I could be doing, and I go, oh my goodness, I should be doing that.
There's no end to that, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, I've done quite a few Chapters book signings, and I did a local book launch.
I visit schools as an author and talk about my book, and I do workshops based on the content. And so I'm always trying to get people to hear about my books. The book also supports a charity called the Canadian Harambee Education Society.
Yes, I saw that. Tell us about that a bit.
Go to that charity.
What,
yeah.
So what does that charity do?
So that charity is based in Vancouver. And it was started by a woman who worked in Kenya for 25 years as a teacher and as a school principal. And she's now a city councillor for New Westminster, BC. And she started this charity raising funds for tuition for girls in Kenya and Tanzania.
Okay.
And they now, this organization, which is completely volunteer run, sends thousands of girls to school, secondary school, which is the challenge, because a lot of girls get
stop
free.
After,
yeah, stop
after
when
the
they're,
element. Because it's free,
right,
up to a certain age.
It's free up to grade six,
okay,
I believe.
Okay.
And then often either they're getting married or they needed to be at home for chores.
Yes.
So this is really a scholarship program to get them through high school and potentially to university as well. And there's a story in the back of my book about a woman named Margaret who was the first graduate from the Canadian Harambee Education Society, and she had been kicked out of school because she couldn't afford the school fees. She was one of 15 children. And the woman who started this charity put her back into school. She ended up finishing high school and going to university, and she now has a doctorate in nursing.
Oh,
and
right.
She's the head trainer at the nursing college in Kenya.
Okay.
And she has two children, and
wow,
her daughter is a lawyer in Canada.
Really?
Yeah.
What a success story.
And her son is just finishing high school now.
Okay.
So that's the perfect example of what can happen with an education.
Yes.
So I was just going to say that the charity has also marketed the book. I've had.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that, how do you find that as a vehicle for getting the name of your book out there?
It seems, so they've done
sort of
a lot, and they're on the other side of the country and have a whole different network. And so they bring this book to all their events.
Okay.
And they've done a lot online with it too. And so that has been really, really helpful.
A real symbiotic relationship
sure.
there, right?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Yeah, 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 interesting. Okay. Well, we're going to wrap up shortly, but I just wanted to go around the table one more time and see if there's something that you folks wanted to mention for, you know, budding young authors that are sort of considering self-publishing and getting their works out there. What would your words of advice and encouragement be, Roland, if you had a young person sort of asking you point blank, you know, I want to write a book, I got a book in me, what would you tell them?
I'd just tell them to write.
Go for it.
Just don't stop writing. Like, some people say write an hour a day, but that you can't do. Write an hour every time you get a chance, and it doesn't have to be in order. Just keep writing.
Yeah, that's step number one if you want to be a writer.
Step number one.
Pretty
and
basic.
It's the part that you'll enjoy the most.
And is your feeling that if you really commit to your craft that way, that the rest will work itself out kind of thing?
The rest will come together.
Yeah.
Even if you write it in different order, it'll all come together in the end.
Interesting. And in terms of self-publishing, would you recommend that as a route to go for a young author?
I would recommend that as a way to go, especially for a first book or something. Yes, after a while, if you want to try the other route, you can.
Yeah.
But I would definitely recommend it, but I would recommend you do your homework first and check them out.
Yes, yes, interesting.
Choose the best one for you.
Yeah. Sam, how about you? What would your words of advice be to a young author just starting out?
I would say, like Roland, absolutely right. The experience of writing is self-discovery, but it's much more than that. And telling stories is how people learn. So it's your access. If you like words and you like to write, it's the experience not only of finding out more about the story that you want to tell, but about the people who are going to read, and that sets up a whole new dialogue.
Yes.
And that's been a wonderful experience for me.
Interesting.
And the self-publishing route has opened up a huge opportunity for me, and because it gives you freedom. You don't have to fit a mold.
Mm-hmm.
And you can explore what you want to learn, and you can teach what you want to teach to whomever is going to read your book. And it's a wonderful method of discovery, and it's well worth it. It's
yeah.
well worth the financial investment, because it comes back.
Yeah.
And it should never hold anyone back. I think it's, you never, the basic motivation for me was that I did not want to live my life saying, I wish I had done that.
Yes, good
and
point.
And that, for me, has been a very good step to motivate me to keep going.
Realization of a lifelong dream.
Yeah, and to really do it and follow it through. And then the exploration afterward has been wonderful. The dialogue with the readers, the dialogue in my own head about the readers and about what the people will learn and what the future is and what the meaning of life is, and it goes on and on and on.
All the big questions.
Yeah, and it's been a wonderful thing. Writing fiction is a terrific adventure.
Yes.
And it's bigger than anything you can possibly imagine before you do
it. Wow. Well, you're obviously quite energized by the whole process. That's a very, very compelling recommendation that you just made there. That's excellent. Valerie, how about you?
Well, I would say the same thing. I mean, absolutely. If you've got a story in your head, get it down on paper, because others can enjoy it, and you'll enjoy it in a new way. And it really is bringing a dream to life when you see your work published and you can hold it in your hand. My experience, and this was dedicated to my daughter, so when she walked through the door, when the books had arrived and
yes.
she sat down and she read it to my son, I mean, it's a moment that I'll cherish for the rest of my life,
sure.
And it was worth all the hard work,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Okay, well, on those wonderful positive words, I think we're going to wrap up our discussion here today. I'm just going to go over the list of books here that we've been talking about. Start with Blanche Renard Putzel's book, The Trouble with Friday, an Emily Blossom mystery. And Sam Putzel, I call her. That's how she's known locally here in Vanklink Hill. Has also written Murder on the Hill, which is also an Emily Blossom mystery as well. And then children's author Valerie Redmond, author of Emma and the African Wishing Bead, and a kid's book, as we said. And Roland R.J. Robert, author of Lake of Hidden Secrets. So you've all got projects that you're up to, and you're busy people and very creative, and I really appreciate you taking the time to have our conversation today. Thanks a lot for this time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.